From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Just when you think Donald Trump can't say anything more outrageous, he tops himself. You've probably already heard one of his latest viral sound bites. He made it while traveling through Iowa ahead of the February 1st caucus.
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's like incredible.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. Even if he was joking, he has a point. Trump's poll numbers keep going up no matter what he says or does. It's not just what Trump says that shocks many Americans, it's that so many people support him. So what is it about Donald Trump that's brought together so many people? That's what we set out to discover on today's show. We teamed up with the polling group YouGov to find out more about the people who support Donald Trump, who they are, where they live, what issues are most important to them. Some of the results will surprise you. They surprised us. We also hit the road. For the past month, we've had a team of reporters and producers traveling to Trump events. We went to three early primary states in three different parts of the country: Nevada, Iowa, and South Carolina. We didn't register as press. We just joined in with the rest of the crowd and recorded what we heard. And on today's show, you'll hear everything the way his supporters hear it, whether it's at a rally or on TV. For our first stop, let's bring in Catherine Miskowski. Hey, Catherine.
Hi, Al.
So we sent you to Las Vegas in December. What was it like going to a Trump rally in Sin City?
Well, a lot of people know Donald Trump because of his casinos in Atlantic City. So it was kind of fitting that this rally was held at a hotel with a casino in Vegas. To get in, I made my way by slot machines on the casino floor. And then I joined a massive security line with hundreds of people waiting hours before the event. And then I finally got inside. There was red, white, and blue everything. There were Trump buttons and signs and sweatshirts that said, "Mr. Trump, build that wall." A Trump impersonator was walking through the crowd offering to take selfies with people. Most of the people there were white. There was a big age range from teenagers to retired folks.
So you're in the rally and it sounds like people were pretty hyped to see their candidate as he took the stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the next president of the United States, Mr. Donald J. Trump!
It's basically a total love fest here.
This is really beautiful, fantastic. What a crowd. All right, thank you. Good job. I love you too. I love you. I do love you. That's why I'm doing this. I had such a nice life. I had such an easy life. Now I'm doing this. Give me a break. We're going to make America great again, folks. We're going to make America great.
The fact that Trump already has so much and is still running for president is one reason why the guy standing next to me supports him.
He doesn't have to be here. Do you understand? He's already got the American dream. The guy can do whatever he wants. He wants to be president because he wants to fix America, not because he hates blacks or Muslims or Mexicans or anything.
That's Michael Augustine. In a lot of ways, he's a typical Trump supporter. He's white, 54 years old, a registered Republican, makes less than $50,000 a year, and doesn't have a bachelor's degree. Michael tells me he voted for none of the above during the last presidential election. He has a thick mane of long, dark hair that falls to his shoulders. It's somewhere on the fashion spectrum between good old boy and subversive. On stage, Trump invites the ralliers to picture the wall he wants to build between the U.S. and Mexico.
This is a big building. See that ceiling? That ceiling is much lower than my wall. Believe me, this is...
Not everyone in the crowd is feeling the love. At Trump rallies across the country, there have been dust-ups between protesters, security, and the crowd. Tonight's no different. It's not long before we hear a protester yell for gun control.
So I'm on TV.
The crowd quickly shouts him down. Across the room, an African-American protester is on the ground being restrained by security. Someone yells the Nazi slogan, Sieg Heil, and a reporter for BuzzFeed captured this.
Light the mother on fire!
I asked Michael about this moment later.
I didn't hear that, and what I heard was support. For that voice, it took less than 3 seconds for the Trump to completely squash it.
Throughout the night, more protesters keep popping up and being escorted out. A white woman shouting Black Lives Matter is dragged out. Trump even jokes about the protesters.
Actually, I just want to say, I staged that. I actually put that person because I was the only way I was going to get the cameras turned to see how many people were there.
Trump wraps up the night on a high note.
The American dream is dead, but we're going to make it bigger and better and stronger than ever before.
The rallygoers throng the stage, taking photos on their cell phones and seeking autographs so that they can take a little piece of Trump back home with them. A couple days later, I visit Michael at his home, about an hour west of Las Vegas. He's a little embarrassed about where he lives, right down to the name of the town, Pahrump.
It's P-Town, anything but the name. When we go to Cali or Vegas, the only time we ever tell anybody where we're from is if we've been partying with them and, you know, it slips.
Michael's been in real estate here. He'll be the first to tell you that has not made him a wealthy man in recent years. He drives a beat-up old truck and is back living in the trailer he grew up in.
Okay, me, look where I'm at. Do you know what my life is? I am poverty. I am poor, white, trailer trash. My life, which half of it is child support, arrearages that I still owe for my son, is $700 a month. That's what it takes me to live.
The Obama years haven't been prosperous ones for Michael. He doesn't pin that on the president, but he does blame Obama for sharpening racial divisions in the country.
When Obama was elected president, I had hoped that he would bring us together. I'm of the opinion that my black friends still like me the same as they liked me before Obama, but there is a line in between us now that was not there before. Obama divided us. I don't know how to explain it without sounding racist or bigoted. As a white man, I'm afraid to have white pride. I'm afraid to speak my white voice. And I never used to be.
He says that he loves that Trump is a bit of a wild card. That's a sentiment I hear a lot from the candidate's supporters.
Now, this is where I fell in love with him, okay? When he first announced his candidacy, I remember looking and going, is this insane? Donald Trump? What the? You know, and I'm listening to him and... And he's kind of an ass. He's pompous and he's, you know, the crazy hair and all that stuff. But in simple layman lifestyle, he really uncomplicates it.
Trump has everything that Michael doesn't, starting with wealth, fame, and celebrity. But the surprise is that the billionaire reality TV host, now Republican presidential candidate, has a way of making Michael feel better about his own life.
I'm sleeping in the same bedroom I slept in 1975, okay? I lost something along the way. I know it was brought on by self, but Trump gave me a little bit of that back.
He told me that Trump makes him feel rich inside. That feeling is worth a lot to him. Here's just how much. He's willing to set aside his top political issue to support him. These days, Michael's become a backyard pot grower and marijuana activist.
I eat a gram a week for religious purposes, and by religious, I mean spiritual.
Michael backs legalization, but done what he calls the right way, so small growers don't get stamped out. That's his number one political issue. Donald Trump is lukewarm on legalization, saying it's a states' rights issue, but he's skeptical. So if Trump vanishes, Michael's throwing his support behind Democrat Bernie Sanders.
Well, Catherine, that's easy. You know, he's the only one that says legalize.
That story was from Reveal's Catherine Miskowski. So, is there a typical Trump supporter? We teamed up with YouGov, an internet polling company, to try and find out. They've been polling the same group of about 5,000 people since last May. That allows them to track changes in opinions over time. Doug Rivers is the chief scientist at YouGov. He's also a professor of political science at Stanford University. He joins us now. Welcome, Doug.
Good to be here.
Doug, can you talk a little bit about the Trump supporter that we just listened to, Michael, and I mean, it just seems sort of strange that he would be really a hardcore Trump supporter, but then at the end of the piece basically say, but if Trump doesn't get the nomination, he's going with Bernie. It just seems like those two things don't fit in the same place.
People say that politics makes strange bedfellows. Here you have a voter picking candidates at the opposite ends of the ideological spectrum. But in fact, I think there's some similarities in the appeal of Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. What they seem to like about Trump is that he offers simple, direct solutions. You want to stop illegal immigration, build a wall. If it costs a lot of money, make Mexico pay for it. In Sanders' case, it's things like free college tuition and health care for all paid for by the government. They appeal to voters who aren't inherently terribly ideological. And I'd say that was Michael's story. He's not happy with the way things are going. The country doesn't seem to belong to him anymore. And Donald Trump, he'll fix things for you. He's the deal maker. He'll bring these magical solutions.
And Doug, so if we just look at demographics, is there a profile of the typical Trump supporter?
The typical Trump supporter is not quite what you would guess. They are more likely to be women than men. Trump gets nearly half the votes among Republican voters over 65, but loses to all of them among Republican voters under 30. They aren't terribly religious, so, which isn't too surprising given Trump's personal biography. The event that Michael was at, I wouldn't describe as a gospel service. And so Trump has this appeal to people who would go to Las Vegas who aren't among the religious base that has been supporting Republican candidates so overwhelmingly in recent elections.
Do you have any idea who they supported in the last presidential election?
There are a big chunk of them who voted for Barack Obama, surprisingly, in 2008. 20% of the people who say they vote for Donald Trump in the Republican primary say they cast a vote for Barack Obama. That's a surprise because these are two such different people. But at this moment, it looks like the Trump appeal is one that seems like a solution to a lot of people's problems, and that's why they're enthusiastic about him.
Do you have any idea if the people who say that they support Trump will actually end up voting for him? I mean, what are their past voting records?
Well, the Trump voters are not typical core Republican voters. So some people say we're polling the wrong people. They're people who like Trump but actually won't show up to vote for him. The one thing I would caution you on is they said the same thing about Barack Obama supporters in 2008, and he actually doubled the turnout in the 2008 Iowa caucuses.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, it feels like we're looking at a mirror. Barack Obama got so many people excited. I mean, it was a historic election. It seems like Trump has the ability to do the exact same thing.
People are excited about this guy. He's funny, entertaining. They think he's strong, he's different, and overwhelmingly they think he says what he means, whereas most of the other politicians, people think they're just trying to win votes.
Doug Rivers is chief scientist at the internet polling company YouGov. He's going to be joining us throughout the show with the results of a new poll on Trump supporters. Thanks, Doug. We'll talk to you in a few. And when we come back, we head to the cold, the bitter cold of winter in Iowa. This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Hey, listeners, Cole Goins here from Reveal. This week, check out our Instagram feed. We're featuring portraits of Trump supporters and scenes from the rallies we attended to make this show. You can find us there at Reveal News. You're probably on your phone right now, so it's pretty easy to give us a follow. Each week, we'll have new photos from our stories sprinkled with a dash of newsroom hijinks. Again, that's at Reveal News on Instagram.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, you are listening to Reveal. I'm Al Letson. This hour, we've been following Republican presidential candidate Donald J. Trump all over the country. He's bringing out record crowds and shaking up the status quo. We wanted to learn a little bit more about the people who support him. A couple weeks ago, I took a trip to Iowa before the caucus to see what some of his supporters had to say. Trump's rally in Clear Lake was held at the Surf Ballroom, a historic venue where, back in the day, big-name acts performed. The Temptations, the Beach Boys, Waylon Jennings, just to name a few. But the ballroom is most famous for being the last place that Buddy Holly and Ritchie Valens played in 1959 before dying in a plane crash. Not a lot has changed in the ballroom since that time. The place is well cared for, but stepping on the hardwood floors feels like walking through a portal to another era. And while the past is still present, today it's all about the future, and Donald Trump is the rock star on the stage.
Please welcome the next president of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
Oh, I just saw Donald Trump. He is my guy. Yeah. Go, Donald.
I gotta say, you're glowing right now.
Yeah.
Dedicated Trump supporters Fran Kirshner and her husband Marvin came to the rally to see Trump for a third time. Fran was downright gleeful.
I thought this was very exciting.
The Kirshners live about a 10-minute drive from the ballroom in Mason City.
Iowa always has a lot of activity around election time, especially a presidential election. Otherwise, no one knows we exist. I mean, we go back to sleep.
And that's just how they like it. Fran is originally from Iowa, but lived on the East Coast with Marv for a while. But when Marv retired, they decided to head home. That was almost 20 years ago, and they haven't looked back.
I like getting away from all the traffic. And it seemed like when we lived in Virginia, if we wanted to go to a concert, you left 3 hours ahead of time, you sat an hour and a half in the traffic, you waited a half an hour in line.
A lot of people, like Marv, were first introduced to Donald Trump through his TV show on NBC, The Apprentice.
I don't think I even heard the word Trump before he had the reality programs on TV.
What kind of a decision? You destroy that company instantaneously. Bradford, you're fired.
I love the way he always in it. You're fired.
But Fran came across Donald Trump the old-fashioned way. She saw his lofty real estate properties.
The first time I ever heard of Donald Trump was I was on a gambling trip with my sister in Atlantic City. And I was just awestruck when I saw the Trump Towers.
Fran's Catholic, and her religion is extremely important to her. She's anti-abortion and against gay marriage. These convictions, they inform the way she lives her life. But those principles aren't the driving force of Trump's campaign.
I thought, well, boy, I hope he runs because he's the one I want to support because I'm kind of fed up with the political system. I think our government is corrupt.
But many of those people that come in, they're sick and tired of these phony, corrupt politicians like Hillary.
Nothing ever gets done. They don't represent us when they get to Washington. They represent their donors. And I think the whole Republican Party is changing. We're just getting fed up. And I think one of the attractions about Trump is he's his own man. He projects himself as being strong and a winner.
So I've given to Hillary. I've given to everybody. Because when I want something, I get it. When I call, they kiss my ass.
Maybe it's that tough talk, Trump's swagger, that speaks to something just under the surface of our conversation.
My neighbor is afraid to fly. I'm not afraid to fly. I mean, you know, hopefully it won't be my flight that gets blown up, but no one feels safe anymore with the dumping ground we become.
What's happening is we don't have a border. We don't need a constitutional amendment to stop this craziness.
We live in a dangerous world. We want to know who's coming in. They're coming into this country, the bad people, for one reason, and that's to kill us.
We want to bring back in Doug Rivers, chief scientist of the internet polling company YouGov. We teamed up with him to dig a little bit deeper into Trump supporters and what they care about. Doug, we keep hearing from Trump supporters, them talking about terrorism. You just listened to Marv and Fran, and they're really scared. I mean, how does that square with the poll and what you found?
We found that Trump voters are a lot like Fran. when asked what's the most important issue for them in this election, they overwhelmingly said immigration or terrorism. Those two things are intertwined. People think that, as Fran said, bad guys are coming over the border, and stopping those is the biggest threat that we face today.
How does this compare with the overall population? I mean, do most people in the U.S. feel this way?
No. Even among Republican voters, the Trump voters are unusual in the extent to which they name those two issues. Other people are interested in the economy, gay marriage, abortion, issues like that. Now, Fran has conservative positions on those issues, and the key to Trump's success will be, can he win those voters over as well as the ones that he appeals to on issues like terrorism and immigration?
I think it's interesting that for Fran, those issues, pardon the pun, trump everything else. Like, she's taking her conservative values and her religious convictions, and it's not as important as the idea of safety and stopping illegal immigration.
If you're worried about those issues, it's pretty understandable why they would trump everything else.
A lot of people have talked about political correctness, and they love the fact that, you know, with Trump, there's no holds barred. Like, he'll just say whatever. What did Trump supporters say in the polls about that?
Well, Trump is the anti-PC candidate. Among Republicans, there aren't a lot of people who are in favor of political correctness. Only 4% of the people in our poll said they thought political correctness was a good thing, and 71% thought it was a bad thing. And Trump really appeals to this because he's the guy who will stick his thumb in the eye of anyone who might be offended by the off-color things that he says.
Race has definitely come into this. Earlier, we heard from Michael in Las Vegas, and he was saying that he feels like he can't be proud to be white, and that he feels like President Obama has divided the country on race. Did you address that issue in your poll?
A bit. We asked Republicans about police treatment of blacks. And most Republicans, and even those that favor Ben Carson, don't think America has a race problem. So you've got a group that they don't like Barack Obama. That's definitely the case. And whether that's due to race or ideology, I can't say. But these are not people who think that we need to take actions on race different from what we've done in the past.
Do you see any parallels between Donald Trump's rise in the polls to back in 2007 and Barack Obama's rise in the polls?
I think these are two very different types of candidates. Trump was very well known, whereas Obama was hardly known at all. So they're different on that score. Obama is the candidate who, while he can give great speeches, sees all the complexities and issues. Trump, his speeches are nearly incoherent, but you can feel the excitement of the audience, of the showbiz. He's making everything simple and easy to understand. And as the music pipes up at the end, the audience is thrilled by it.
Doug Rivers is chief scientist at the internet polling company YouGov. Thanks for all your help, Doug.
Thank you.
And when we come back, we head to South Carolina with what we're calling the Trump game. That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Hi there. I'm Julia B. Chan, the digital editor here at Reveal. Our host Al ends every show by saying, there's always more to the story. And there really is. At revealnews.org, you can dig deeper into the issues and stories our show brings to light. The entire Reveal archive lives on our website. You can catch up on past episodes, read original investigations, or interact with our stories in surprising new ways. Check it out at revealnews.org.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson.
We used to have victories, but we don't have them. When
was
the last time anybody saw us beating, let's say, China in a trade deal?
He's a businessman. Okay, he's talking about we don't have victories. If you don't have victories, you don't win the war.
You're listening to someone playing the Trump game. Reveal reporter Nate Halverson made this game up and took it to a political rally in South Carolina. Hey, Nate, how are you?
I'm doing good, Al.
So tell me about this game. Where'd you take it? What were you doing?
Basically, I wanted to find a way to get people to react to Trump and understand what it was that they liked about some of his more controversial or stump speech rally stuff. And so I threw 15 audio clips of it on an iPad and let people listen, and I recorded their reactions.
Let's hear some more.
We're going to take our country back, folks. We're going to take it back.
And that's what we believe. We believe it. He's going to give us back our country. We the people are going to matter again. I love his voice. That's another thing I like about him. I love his voice.
And Nate, you were asking people in South Carolina to play this game during a week when Republican candidates were crisscrossing the state.
Yeah, my first Trump event is at the Tea Party Convention in Myrtle Beach with a few hundred people crammed into a hotel banquet room. It feels like a pancake social, decked out in red, white, and blue. Trump starts with a joke, then he touts his performance at the Republican debate 2 days earlier.
It's been for me, it's been a great experience. You know, Thank you. Who said that? Stand up.
The man who yelled, "You won!" stands up. He's wearing a Trump t-shirt, khakis, and holding a bag full of Trump stickers. It's John Steinberger, a normally straight-laced, no-nonsense property manager from Charleston.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you seem like a fairly reserved, composed person. Were you surprised by how electrified you were by Trump at his rallies?
Oh, sure. I've never seen anything like it. I've never experienced this before, so it really is moving.
John was the Republican chair in Charleston County until last April. He felt he had to step down so he could declare his support for Trump. He's the first to play the Trump game.
You click one photo and it'll play a quote, and you just tell me what you think of it.
Okay.
And who's going to pay for the wall? Who's going to pay for the wall?
Well, he knows how to handle a crowd.
I've never done that before. That's actually cute.
If you look at his plan on DonaldJTrump.com, he explains how Mexico will pay for the wall, and the primary way is increasing the border crossing fee.
You've been to 30-plus rallies. Have you ever heard anyone handle a crowd that well?
Never, not even close.
Can you just describe what it's like being there when he's working the crowd?
Well, it's electric. Your skin tingles, and everybody's just so excited and happy to be there, and it's an electric atmosphere.
Trump has ignited a spark in John. I witnessed this passion among Trump supporters throughout South Carolina. My next stop is Murrells Inlet, a small hamlet tucked into the state's coastal marshes. I arrive at a waterfront home built on pilings. It's raining, the kind of driving rain that made you wish you had stayed home in bed. I step out of my car and dart up the doorsteps of Trump supporter Jane Spillane, widow of legendary detective writer Mickey Spillane.
How are you?
I'm great. Hey, Jane.
Good to see you, Nathan.
We walk into her foyer full of posters and photos of her husband's career.
This is the original photograph, 1946, of the first book Mickey ever wrote. We have Kiss Me Deadly. We have posters, My Gun Is Quick. And that became a film noir. That became a classic, Kiss Me Deadly.
Mickey Spillane, with his tough-talking characters, was a master entertainer. Jane says Donald Trump reminds her of her late husband.
Straight talker, just like Donald Trump.
How entertaining is Donald Trump?
He's very entertaining. He doesn't give a flying rip. He will say something that I'm thinking and nobody else. And it's funny sometimes. You know, we get his humor.
What I've been having everybody do is play the Trump game. And it's just, you listen to Donald Trump's quotes and you respond.
Okay.
She taps a photo of Trump, whose face is clenched with emotion.
And this country needs to get away from political correctness. It's killing us. It's killing us.
Amen, Donald Trump. Just what I've been thinking. We're tired of political correctness. We're sick of it. You know, I'm sick of people saying I'm insulted. Well, you know what? That's life. We all get insulted. You know, you got to face it. You go through life, you're going to get insulted, and you don't go home and cry about it and complain. Okay, what do you want to do next?
Should we try another one?
Okay, let's see. That was the...
We talked about what's happening at the border. We talked about the illegals pouring in. And all of a sudden, people started seeing lots of crime, and they started really seeing it, but it was focused because it was like a magnifying glass. And
yes,
we had beautiful Kate in San Francisco who was killed and shot five times. And then we had so many others. We had the woman a few weeks ago in California raped.
He cares.
Sodomized. 66-year-old veteran raped, sodomized, and killed by an illegal immigrant.
And that should never have happened.
The way he describes these events, I mean, they're infused with such violence and detail.
He could have been a writer. I mean, he is the writer. You visualize things when he talks.
Trump doesn't always get his facts straight. But what he says connects with supporters on an emotional level.
He's probably the most brilliant campaigner we've seen, when you think about it.
I say goodbye to Jane, but everywhere I go, I hear similar reactions from people playing the Trump game, especially when it comes to political correctness. They hate it.
Political correctness, it's killing us. It's killing us.
You know, I got to agree with it 1,000%.
Political correctness was designed to shut the truth up. I mean, we're losing our country because of it. And if you try to tell the truth about something, they call you names.
And I think political correctness has gone crazy, and it's really had an effect of shutting people down. I'd like to say a lot of things, but I will not say them on your radio station.
What's like an example now of something that a person would want to say, but they'd have to hold their tongue?
Somebody might want to say that two men getting married or two women getting married was a bad thing. They won't say that now, but when I was coming up, that was a bad thing.
There's someone else in South Carolina I want to play the Trump game, a well-connected Republican, Susan Chapman. I drive to Conway, a small southern town near Myrtle Beach. Her home, with a sweeping front porch and columns, is surrounded by willow trees and sits just behind Main Street.
Place is beautiful.
Come on in.
Oh, wow.
Can I get y'all something to drink? Coffee, a water, anything?
The house was built before the Civil War, Susan says, by a man who holds a special place in Southern history.
He actually signed the Acts of Secession.
Susan has deep political ties.
Of course, I worked for Lindsey for years.
Lindsey? Is South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
This is a photo taken at the White House. My son Cliff with Laura Bush, President Bush, and myself, Susan.
So, I mean, it seems like you're really part of the Republican establishment, or at least you were.
I was. And that's a whole nother story we'll go talk about.
We go to her parlor.
I mean, I was a Republican senatorial life member, inner circle, and you name it, all that stuff.
And what happened?
I think what happened is when all these people went to the stage to take down the flag, of course, I was against taking down the flag.
The Confederate flag. It was removed from the South Carolina Capitol last July.
And that's when I went to Trump.
You went to Trump?
I went straight to Trump, and I'm on his leadership team or steering committee in South Carolina.
Susan feels betrayed by the Republican establishment.
And I think most people saw this as an establishment move, a political move to try to bring the South into this. Let's pull down that flag, and in doing this, we can bring the blacks into the party. We can become more diverse. But the thing is, it opened my eyes and a lot of people's eyes.
I pull out the iPad.
Can I show you this? Can we play the Trump game? This is what I've been having.
I'll be glad to.
Washington is broken, and our country
is so broken.
And total
it is.
Disarray.
He's so right
Very
there.
Simple. Politicians are all talk, no action.
Exactly.
They're all talk and no action.
Exactly.
And it's constant. It never ends.
I think that's probably the most important thing he said
very conservative
out of all of this.
And I'm very disappointed by our Republican politicians.
And that, I think, that tells you right there what Trump supporters believe. It's broken.
Susan and other white voters I spoke with feel their legacy is being pulled down, just like the Confederate flag.
It is not racist to us. Maybe to some it is racist. To me, it's history. When you grew up in the South, the black families, well, your families, I was basically raised. I can name off the ladies that basically raised me. Ruby Lee, who basically raised me, was a black lady. Her children were my friends. When my father died, she rode with us in the car. When I got married, she sat with the family.
These were people who worked for her family.
But everybody had someone that was part of their family. My grandmama had a guy that worked in the yard and the lady that worked in the house, and we didn't think of them of being less than us or whatever. They were our family. They were extension of our family. So we didn't see it as racist. Now, I'm sure that there's some blacks that do. I concur on that.
Susan said something to me I was going to hear over and over again from people playing the Trump game.
If we're a party of the big tent where we want diversity, we want blacks and immigrants and women and gays and everybody else in it, but we don't want conservatives, then we as conservatives need to go somewhere else. We need to go where we're wounded.
And Trump wants these supporters, Susan says.
And that's why every time he says something that they say, oh, this will get him, people are saying, hallelujah, they're finally saying what I think and what I'm afraid to go out and say. Of course, I'm not, but most people are.
What do you think of the Trump game?
I like it. That's fun. That's really fun.
Susan taps another soundbite. It's a Fox News anchor interviewing Trump back in November. He's asking about a black protester, a member of Black Lives Matter, who reportedly got punched, kicked, and choked at a Trump rally in Alabama.
Can you comment on that and whether or not you want to remedy that situation?
I remember
the man
this.
I don't know, you say roughed up. He was so obnoxious and so loud. He was screaming. I had 10,000 people in the room yesterday, 10,000 people. And this guy started screaming by himself. And they did, I don't know, rough up? Maybe he should have been roughed up because it was absolutely disgusting what he was doing.
See, this is the kind of thing I think that makes him so popular, is that everybody sitting in that room probably was thinking the same thing, but was scared to say it because they knew what they would say about him, that they were racist. And so I think he says what we think.
Do you think, though, that it's almost like he was encouraging or saying it was okay to rough people up. I mean, I think that's what people reacted to and got upset by.
I think most people don't want people to be roughed up, but in the backside of their minds, they're probably thinking maybe they ought to be roughed up. You know what I'm trying to say? We have a conscience, and we know what we as human beings and Americans should feel. But yet, on the other side of our brain, we're thinking, well, but maybe it is.
Susan says the country needs someone like Trump, someone who can take control.
My father once said the best person to run a country is a benevolent dictator, and that is probably what he will be, a benevolent dictator, to get it straight again.
A benevolent dictator. Nate, I mean, what'd you think when she said that?
Yeah, that one caught my attention, no doubt about it. You know, I was hearing it in various forms from other people I talked to. I mean, Trump supporters want essentially a really strong leader.
The National Review, the quintessential conservative magazine, just put out a whole issue dedicated to dissing Trump. What do you think has caused this rift between the base and the leadership?
Well, I could say among the base that I spoke to, I mean, they feel like the leadership doesn't represent them. They feel like the leadership represents a small number of wealthy, affluent people. And I mean, I had people use the language to me that the Republican Party was run by the 1%, that they were the 99%, and that they were rising up against those political insiders that were on Washington.
Nate, thanks for bringing us that story.
Thank you, Al.
That's Reveal's Nathan Halverson. You can try out the Trump game for yourself by going to our website, revealnews.org. Issues around race have come up a lot in this show. Trump supporters are mainly white, about 80% according to the YouGov polling data. And we should note that there were few people of color at the Trump events we attended. When I was in Iowa, I was just one of a handful of African-Americans at Trump's rally, and most of them were working the event, like Secret Service or in the media. I was definitely the only black man with dreadlocks there. And when Reveal's producer Ike Sriskandaraja showed up to cover that Tea Party convention in Myrtle Beach, there weren't many other brown men in the room. He picks up his story outside the event, where he ran into a group of bikers supporting Trump.
About 100 motorcyclists crowd the road leading to the hotel convention center where the Tea Party rally is happening. They're waiting to cheer on Donald Trump. He's expected to drive by any minute on his way to make a speech there.
Trump, you know, banners and everything, flags, the whole deal. Crazy blonde lady with a Trump sign, you know, yelling in every direction.
Alan Flores is a member of the motorcycle club Knights Templar. They take their name from a secretive sect of holy warriors who fought in the Crusades. These days, they tell me they're still defending Christianity, but instead of shining armor, these knights have leather jackets, sleeve tattoos, and lots of Trump signs.
For you, why Trump?
The way everybody's so politically correct these days and apologizing to everybody, you know, apologizing just to apologize. People call him brash or arrogant, and an arrogant American is how we got to be what we are today, and we're losing that a little bit at a time.
As we're talking, the police ask the bikers to move farther down the road because they're blocking traffic. And I want to go with them.
Okay, now my ride just took off. Is there anybody here I can hitch with?
Yeah, I mean, you can ride with me if you need to.
So I hop on Alan's bike. It's a 2014 Victory Cross Country, all white, polished, curves. From the front, it kind of looks like a stormtrooper's helmet on wheels.
What do I do?
Just put your feet on the pegs and don't fly off.
Okay. Oh, wow. This is the best part of my day.
Alan put out the call on Facebook to get his motorcycle buddies to show up today. He's inviting, easy to talk to, and doesn't mind pulling into a Trump rally with a public radio recorder on the back of his bike.
And have you been involved in, other political events like this?
Not one. This is it. You know, in the last 2 weeks, this is everything that we've ever done politically.
Alan's a big guy, over 6 feet tall, broad, former military. He's wearing wraparound sunglasses and has a wiry bristle of a beard that hangs off his chin. I feel guilty that I've trained myself to avoid guys that look like Alan, like avoiding bright colors in nature. Part of the reason is something that happened to me a few weeks ago. I was eating at a roadside place and there was a group of bikers there. And when I left to get on my bicycle, one of them followed me outside. He said, "Hey, ISIS," and told me if he was riding next to me, he'd kick me off the road. Then he said he was just messing with me and made me shake his hand. A classic bully move. So, I'm reluctant to ask this group my next question about Trump.
And what about some of the, like, more controversial things that, like, he's banned Muslims, a temporary ban on Muslims?
I agree with that 100%, banning Muslims. I mean,
Anthony Leggio is a New York-born biker who now owns a small business in South Carolina.
He's not banning everybody, he's just stopping it until he gets a grip of what's going on. I'm not saying all Muslims are bad. There's a lot of Muslims that are wonderful people. We just have to figure out who's who.
Another biker named AT from Myrtle Beach agrees.
And there's always going to be people that hate us. I understand that. But listen, we're not over there trying to chop people's heads off. And we don't want that going on here either. So for that, we need a strong man who's going to take care of all that.
I talked to another strong man who looks and sounds like a professional wrestler.
How you doing, my man?
And got the question I'd been asked a lot on this trip.
Where are you from, sir?
It's kind of hard to hear over all the engine noise.
Oakland, I grew up in Wisconsin.
So he asked me where I'm from, and I start where I live now, in Oakland, California, then go back to where I was born, Wisconsin. But I know where this question's going.
What is your nationality?
I'm Sri Lankan.
What is that?
My family is Sri Lankan, which is a small island nation in the Indian Ocean. So he latches on to India.
Oh, India, we're cool with India.
He says, we're cool with India, which is a nation of mostly Hindus, as long as it's not Pakistan.
I know India don't like Pakistan. We're cool with the Hindus.
Here's Donald right now. Donald Trump is pulling in.
Coordinator of Force campaign says he's probably gonna stop when he leaves. If we park the bike so I won't pay it, I'm gonna go to Damon's for a half hour.
Yeah.
And then I'm coming back.
Yeah, you buy it?
Because I want to speak to Donald Trump.
Hell yeah.
Let's all go to Damon's.
Let's go.
They don't want to spend the $79 to get inside the Tea Party convention. So they hope to catch Trump on his way out. In the meantime, they peel off to go to Damon's, a nearby bar. I part ways with the bikers and head into the convention hall just as Trump is taking the stage. This was a couple days before Sarah Palin threw her Tea Party support behind Trump. And some people in the crowd don't like it when he takes aim at the other GOP frontrunner, Ted Cruz. But they're on board when he repeats the same concerns I heard from the bikers.
I turn on the television today. What do I see? Islamic, right? Right? Radical Islamic terrorism. That's what I see. We can't just do this. We got to make sure the Syrian immigration. We don't know where these people come from.
He raises the same question I'd heard earlier. Where do you come from?
This could be the ultimate Trojan horse. But we have no idea where they come from. So we have to be smart. We have to be tough. We have to be vigilant. And we can do it. And we can make America greater than ever before. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Trump supporters stream out of the conference room and into the hall, and they carry his message with them, kind of like when you leave a concert and your favorite song of the night gets stuck in your head.
He's the only one that put it all away. Nobody else dared to say no more Muslims until things get taken care of. And you know that he didn't mean it for the bad. You know he didn't mean it to offend anyone. He just wants to say this is the way we need to do it.
That's when I hear an unlikely voice. A black woman in her 30s wearing a Guns N' Roses t-shirt speaking to two older white ladies. She's criticizing Black Lives Matter for attacking the GOP.
Anger and all that negative is coming from black lives. There are problems. There is still racism. But since we're ignoring the problems, it's getting bigger and it's going to tear us apart. So let's talk about it.
That's Anita Moncrief. She's an ex-liberal, and the us she's talking about is the conservative movement. She tells me she isn't a Trump supporter, but she'll vote for him if he gets the nomination. A group called the Black Conservatives Fund pays for her to go to right-wing events like this one. She's often the only black person in the room and has conversations about race with people who hate political correctness.
You're never going to be able to have real relationships until you can have real conversations. So that means talking about things. So I create safe spaces and I let people ask me stuff. I've had people want to touch my hair. I have had people ask me questions about blacks and how they feel about things. But it's okay because there's no judgment there, because there's a level of curiosity and a fear of being labeled something they aren't.
It's lonely work, but Anita can picture a more inclusive and more diverse Republican Party.
I mean, I don't care if you're wearing a do-rag or a business suit. There's a place for you in the Republican Party, but it's not only getting blacks and other people of color to realize it, but it's getting the party to accept that we're not going to change.
Do you think you're going to stay on this side for the foreseeable future?
I think that I will always be a conservative, but I have been leaning towards libertarianism. Yeah. I mean, they've got so many great ideas, and Rand Paul's hair, I just want to touch it. So I guess some people would tell me I was being culturally insensitive. It's like, if I get close enough and I go, can I touch your hair? I just imagine him saying yes.
That story was from Ike Sriskandarajan. We decided to do an hour on Trump supporters because we wanted to see what Trump's America looks like. We went all over the country, from casinos to dance halls, into people's homes, on the backs of motorcycles, anywhere we could find them. Because we didn't just want to get the soundbite, we wanted to get to the heart of the matter. What we found were people who were disenchanted with the status quo, who felt like no one had heard their voice, the things they held dear, a way of life, traditional values being lost. We also heard a lot of fear of the distant threat of ISIS and of immigrants crossing the border illegally. But there was something else. People echoing some of the racist rhetoric of Donald Trump. His slogan, "Make America Great Again," feels like solid ground, a place to plant a flag and say no more. But the idealized America they want to go back to wasn't ideal for everyone. When I hear that slogan, combined with that racist rhetoric, what I really hear is get to the back of the bus. So what did you think of Trump's America? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter. We're going to tell you about next week's show in a minute. But first, today's show was edited by Deb George. Senior editor Jennifer LaFleur analyzed our polling data. Rachel DeLeon produced our story on Iowa and helped produce our polling segments, along with senior editor Andy Donahue. We had additional production help from Michael Montgomery, Amy Walters, and Julia B. Chan. Our lead sound designer and engineer is my man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, with help from Claire Mullen. Our theme music is by Camarado Lightning. Amy Powell is our managing editor, and our head of studio is Krista Scharfenberg. Suzanne Reber is our executive editor, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Next week, we got a great story coming up. You will meet a man who works at a privately run prison for immigrants, who says the medical system there is so bad that
I'd close this whole facility down and I'd start over again.
That's next week on Reveal. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson. And remember, there is always more to the story.